Welcome to The Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail. Each month starts with a deep dive into SPINS data, spotlighting growth trends and key industry insights. Then I'll bring you conversations with industry leaders and highlight brands making waves in the natural channel. We'll wrap up each month with actionable strategies, collaborative discussions, and tactical tips to help you thrive. This season is packed with fresh perspectives, big ideas, and everything you need to stay informed in natural food retail.
At Chomps, we make meat sticks so you can make moves. We believe snacking should be simple, nutritious, and delicious. And with Chomps, there's no compromise. Our meat sticks have 10 plus grams of protein, 0 grams of sugar, and are made with real ingredients, making them a perfect snack for people who are hungry for it all. So, whether you need a protein pick-me-up between meetings, a post-workout snack, or just something nutritious to get through the day, we've got you. Regardless of what flavor your day calls for, you can always find multiple Chomps flavors in store. So, reach for a new flavor and peel back a better snack. Because we believe better snacks should build a better world. What started as a commitment to high standards in our products has led to those same high standards being applied across our business. Chomps is proud to be B Corp certified, joining a global movement of companies using business as a force for good. Chomps, take bigger bites.
And welcome to The Buyer's Desk, an Infra podcast. I'm Kim Rout, Infra Senior Category Manager and your guest host today, here with a rundown of what's happening on the data side of the natural foods industry. It's April again, and this month holds a very special holiday for all the clever listeners out there, National Scrabble Day. In all seriousness, this feels like an apt time to check in on the state of THC products in the natural food space. What a long, strange trip it's been for cannabis, and especially hemp in the CPG world. From musty head shops and reefer madness to prominent placement at Targets nationwide. Even with some challenging legislation on the horizon, sales success for the THC products are far from going up in smoke. To make sure our listeners aren't left dazed and confused by all these changes, I have invited our data expert and SPINS aficionado, Jim Olson, to help gauge the current state of THC. Jim, welcome back to the pod.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, as always, for having me. If I'm being honest, you are truly the Cheech to my Chong. Sorry, I had to get one final pun in there before we actually locked in for real.
I love it. Totally fair and honestly a good point. I think we've come far enough in the cultural conversation to take THC at face value and treat it as a valid, available CPG product, don't you?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, all jokes aside, earlier you referenced a little bit kind of the long timeline to acceptance. And I think that's worth revisiting. I think we're at a point where we can treat this more professionally and really speak earnestly to the, as you mentioned, the sales success that it's really seeing in the modern day marketplace. You know, we're a pretty far cry from the manufactured panic of the way back in the 1930s, you know, through the kind of more counter-cultural embrace of the 60s and 70s. You know, we're kind of seen as something that maybe lesser citizens participate in. And I'm really at a point of, you know, true mainstream embrace, especially in this current decade, even since the, you know, 2018, the Farm Bill loosened restrictions on hemp-based products. And then those first few years of the 2020s saw a number of, maybe not as many, but some really prominent retailers jump into the fray, especially up in here in Minnesota. And then over the next few years, you know, from 2020 to, you know, 2026 now, you know, some more retailer embrace. I know Total Wine and More were one of the first big national retailers to take a dip in it. up here in Minnesota, Target made a big step just a year and a half ago to start stocking more THC products. You know, looking broadly, there's still some concentration, you know, obviously due to state level legislation. I think five states make up about 45% of total U.S. dollar sales of THC, CPG, THC products, according to our colleagues at Circana. So a little concentrated, but definitely, you know, a much, much bigger footprint than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
For sure. So Jim, before we get too far, can you help our listeners understand what we're talking about when we talk about THC CPG?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great question. You know, the data points I'm speaking to that are available in SPINS, I should mention, I'm using the attribute of functional ingredient and Delta 9 for folks who like to look in on their own. Data points I'm speaking to are related to THC products featuring the Delta 9 cannabinoid. And if you don't mind me slipping into professor mode here and take you to Weed College, think of some of the different popular products, you know, in this space, CBD, non-intoxicating hemp-derived product, great for anxiety reduction, stress reduction, without that more intoxicating high feel. Delta 8, often derived from CBD, but in small quantities. So a lot of happens is kind of more manufactured in a lab to get to the amount needed to manufacture products. Gives you kind of a very low, very mild high. And then Delta 9 is the primary intoxicant found in marijuana that produces a more substantial high. So this latter form, the Delta 9, has been the main driver of THC sales in the CPG space as of late.
Now, a lot of what you're referring to sounds like the canned beverage category. Is that where all the sales live?
Yeah. That's been really the main driver. By and large, beverages, THC beverages are leading sales. For infra, they make up just under half of all THC sales. I think for infra, it's like 49.2% of all THC sales at infra fall under the beverage category. So definitely the biggest player. And within there, you have some derivatives, you know, the sparkling waters and seltzers, functional beverages, sodas, all playing into that momentum with strong sales across each one of those categories. THC waters are up 68% versus a year ago. Functional beverages up 94%. Soda up 205%. And you think of some of those ones, you know, this has been the decade or two of LaCroix, you know, of recess and things. So, of course, water is going to have a lot of action. Functional beverages, people love, you know, the era of Poppy and Olipop adding some functionality, you know, so those are big. And then soda, you know, the modern soda craze definitely helped influence some of those different sales momentums that I spoke to. So if listeners out there are looking for some brand specific examples of these THC beverages within infra, Cornbread Hemp, Can, Balanced, BL and CD are all fall in the top 10 sellers across Invra with double digit growth over the past year. Certainly a lot more in this space. I do a monthly poll just as a pulse check of my own interest about how this does across Invra. And my last poll I did was in December, and pulling it here in April, 67 additional products came into my poll. So the space continues to grow, especially in beverage.
That is some very fascinating numbers there, Jim. What do you think it is about beverages that makes them such an attractive vehicle for THC consumption?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, over the past, 5 years now, kind of very much post-pandemic, there's been a lot of conversations about people revisiting their relationship with alcohol, you know, your dry Januaries, your sober Octobers, damp Januaries, people zebra striping, you know, doing one alcoholic drink, one water, alcohol drink, one water, just finding different ways to kind of reduce the alcohol consumption in their lives. And folks who still want to be in social situations have looked at THC beverages as a great alternative, right? Lets you give you the same relaxing feeling that alcohol does, without maybe the amount of calories or, you know, the other, you know, potential health damages that the alcohol tends to bring naturally, right? So great for social, you know, social lubricants, as they say. The flavor profiles add to really refreshing feeling during consumption. You think of some of the fun ones, a lot of citrus, a lot of tropical fruit blends. There's a local brand in Minnesota, Cann, C-A-N-N. A lot of fun varieties of flavors, you know, blood orange cardamom, lemon lavender, grapefruit rosemary. You know, these are great, refreshing things. You know, you sit on your back porch or hanging out on the couch. You know, we're wrapping up March Madness as we record this. So, you know, a fun flavor, right? Fun to drink. Don't have the bitterness of beers and some other things. That definitely leads to easier approach to consumption.
You said March Madness, and I thought about my brackets, and I think I'm a little sad. But
it's all right. My daughter's currently whooping me right now, so
it happens. It does. Well, outside of beverages, where else are we seeing THC products penetrate across infra?
Yeah, you know, outside of beverages, I would say gummies are another area that offers a lot of convenience. Again, a lot of fun tropical fruit flavors. And maybe most importantly, the ability to manage dosage. You know, right now, gummies represent, I think, over $600,000 in sales across infra. I think they're second only to beverages, which makes up about $1.1 million in annual sales at infra. So gummies are definitely a very big option in terms of THC consumption. And as I mentioned, in terms of dosage, right, just like alcohol, different folks have different tolerances for how much THC consumption affects them. You know, you have some really low options in the gummy space, about, 2.5 milligrams on the very low end, move up to 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams beyond. It's all kind of what you can handle. So the gummy format allows customers to cater to their more specific desires in terms of, you know, how much impact they want to feel. And that's something to consider for, you know, our retailer members listening in as they decide on the amount of SKUs to carry, you know, giving different levels of options for their customers to choose from to meet what matches them and not be scared away by anything that's too high and it's going to be kind of overwhelming and an unfun experience.
So I'm glad you mentioned retailer perspective, because I'm sure our listeners who haven't entered this space yet are looking for some first step suggestions.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm not a retailer myself, but, you know, I do make a point to ask the members whenever I get the chance to see them, kind of where they sit, right? I would say, first of all, just check with state laws on what's allowable to sell. You know, I'll touch on some legislation things in a minute here, but and then determine, you know, what's your mix? Do you want to do just gummies, just beverages? Do you want to do it one or the other? I know there are some. I've visited some members this past year, and they've received special, you know, mini coolers from certain brands to really partner with and make a fun, you know, display or kind of a prominent area for customers to access and discover. A lot of liquor stores have embraced THC products, so that's a new type of competitor to consider if you're getting to this. So now you're up against your local liquor store in addition to the Aldi's and the Whole Foods and whoever else that you're already, you know, competing with in the grocery space. So something additional to keep in mind. With beverages in particular, a lot of feedback I've heard from members in recent years is the difficulty in distribution and just acquiring product, you know, for these beverages. Some of them are owned or partnered with alcohol manufacturers. So if you are a store that doesn't have an alcohol set right now and you want to bring in THC beverages, now you have to establish a brand new relationship with an alcohol distributor, which takes time, you know, takes access and other roadblocks. So, you know, you're dealing with some new hurdles rather than just if you're bringing in the latest, you know, tortilla chip, right?
For sure. So, Jim, you mentioned the legal side of things earlier. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of it's a weird time right now at the both national and state level in terms of THC products. During one of the more recent federal government shutdowns, a ban on hemp-derived THC was included in a larger agreement and passed. And what this legislation did was gave all producers until November of 2026, so November of this year, to eliminate any product containing more than 0.4 milligrams of Delta 9 THC. So 0.4 is an incredibly low ceiling. You know, I was speaking earlier on the low end of dosage of you know, 2.5 milligrams. So 0.4 basically wipes out the vast majority, if not all, products currently on shelf. However, there is some movement here. I think it was passed, of course, but not with a lot of happy faces, especially in a lot of Midwestern, you know, farming states. Indiana Representative Jim Baird recently introduced legislation to delay this ban so some more thoughtful analysis can be completed. You know, he spoke on behalf of the hemp farmers, you know, who have already put crops, you know, put seeds in the ground, planted or cultivating, planning out for harvests. You know, it's something you have to do well in advance. You know, farming isn't a 1 month turnaround for anything, right? You know, the overall hemp industry right now is valued at $28 billion. So there's a lot of market potential here that could get all, you know, wiped away if this went all the way through. So something to consider. And then, you know, state level legislation can cause whiplash too. I spoke last summer with a member in Iowa in a college town, right, who has seen enormous sales for their THC products, huge, huge sales booster for them. But it had to deal with, I think, three different governors giving three different messages on current and future state laws. And that's a lot for a member to juggle for just one section of a larger store, right? I don't have to preach to the choir here of the members and all the different things to keep track of all the time. And so to bring this in, it can be, you know, one additional stressor to have to deal with, right? And it's really making retailers, you know, disincentivized to invest too deeply when the waters in the future is that murky.
With all that being said, where do you see the THC CPG landscape going in the next few years?
You know, I personally think it has lasting power, you know, looking at, you know, using SPINS data, of course, looking at some of these sales figures, it's still very promising. You know, THC sales across infra are up 105%. Again, I checked last winter, it was at 95%. So it's growing. So that sales growth continues to get bigger as we go along here. And breaking it down by region just to see where members are having the most success. Strongest regional sales are in the Northwest for infra members, which kind of makes sense where they've had, you know, legalization for a long time. But you think of the Northwest too, you know, the Pacific Northwest, and I'm sure they've long established head shops and other areas. And still finding, you know, that's not something that falls into SPINS data. So the fact that we're still seeing great, great strong growth, triple digit growth, in a place where they've had legalization and other areas of access to THC products, I think that really speaks well to the viability of it. I think the second strongest region across infra is the Southeast, where lifestyle choices may be a bit more conservative. And there's, you know, the second biggest region, triple digit growth in terms of THC products, good dollar value overall too. So I think that also speaks well to the viability, you know, across regions, regardless of where you are. Granted, you know, local legalization options are there. And you think at infra, again, that 105% growth across all of infra outpaces the larger natural channel, which is seeing 90% growth in THC products. And even conventional channel THC sales are up just a little bit over 100% too. So, you know, you can see that embrace. It's not just, you know, your funky small shop on the corner in the Northwest. It's nationwide. It's these major retailers. It's across channels. It's outside of the natural channel and into conventional too. So there is a good foundation there. And I don't live near many infra members, unfortunately. But the liquor stores I stop at all sing the praises of the strong sales they get from THC products. And I mentioned, you know, some conventional successes, you know, some of the retail players there. I think I'll just end and say, you know, you think of a lot of the big time players that have entered this space, you know, your Targets, your Sprouts, your Circle K's even, you know, they have a lot of sway and don't want to see their investment go to waste. You know, this is a very particular, well thought through, multi-level decision. You know, I think of all the corporate machines that still came to this decision. They don't want to see that go to waste. You know, I expect considerable pushback, and at the very least a delay past November. I mean, then again, you know, optimism and government efficiency never really made the best bedfellows, right? So we'll see.
No comment. Well, Jim, thanks for coming on the podcast today. Here's hoping the grass is a little greener in the near future.
Ah, see what you did there. Thank you, Kim. Thanks for having me.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible. Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spin's segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, audio engineer and segment contributor.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.